ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् बिफोर् रिसाइटिंग द श्रीमद् भागवतम् Which is our very means of conquest. We should offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. This morning, reading from the fourth canto, 26th chapter, King Paranjan goes to the forest to hunt, text number 9. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. When King Paranjan was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by the sharp arrow heads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. Purport: When demoniac persons engage in animal killing, the demigods or devotees of the Lord are very much afflicted by this killing. Demoniac civilizations in this modern age maintain various types of slaughterhouses all over the world. Rascal swamis and yogis encourage foolish persons to go on eating flesh and killing animals, and at the same time continue their so-called meditation and mystical practices. All these affairs are ghastly, and a compassionate person, namely a devotee of the Lord, becomes very unhappy to see such a sight. The hunting process is also carried on in a different way, as we have already explained. Hunting women, drinking different types of liquor, becoming intoxicating, killing animals, and enjoying sex all serve as the basis of modern civilization. Vaishnavas are unhappy to see such a situation in the world, and therefore they are very busy spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. The devotees are pained to see the hunting and killing of animals in the forest, the wholesale slaughter of animals in the slaughterhouses, and the exploitation of young girls in brothels that function under different names as clubs and societies. Being very much compassionate upon the killing of animals and sacrifice, the great sage Narada began his instructions to King Prachini Barhishat. In these instructions, Narada Muni explained that devotees like him are very much afflicted by all the killing that goes on in human society. Not only are saintly persons afflicted by this killing, but even God himself is afflicted and therefore comes down in the incarnation of Lord Buddha. Jayadev Goswami therefore sings, Sadai Hridaya Darshita Pashu Ghatam. Simply to stop the killing of the animals, Lord Buddha compassionately appeared. Some rascals put forward the theory that an animal has no soul or something like dead stone. In this way, they rationalize that there is no sin in animal killing. Actually, animals are not dead stone, but the killers of animals are stone-hearted. Consequently, no reason or philosophy appeals to them. They continue keeping slaughterhouses and killing animals in the forest. The conclusion is that one who does not care for the instructions of saintly persons like Narada and his disciplic succession surely falls into the category of nashta pragya and thus goes to hell. Tatra nirbina gatranam chitra vajai shilimukai viplavo buddukitanam dusasa karunatmanam. Translation again. When King Paranjan was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by the sharp arrowheads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. Mukam karoti bachalam bangam langayate ganim vikripatarham mande sri gurun dinatarinam. So this canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is explained to deal with the subject matter which is termed poshana in Sanskrit. Poshana means the favor which is shown to the faithful. Now, this allegorical story of King Puranjan is an example of such favor that Narada Muni, in order to very nicely instruct the pious king, Prachini Barhishat, who simply by his following the Karmakandiya section of the Vedas, being impelled by material desires, as well as, of course, one who follows the Vedas is certainly pious, but being a big king and wanting to have good fruitive reactions. And that's material desire. So he's been performing these animal sacrifices. So showing him favor, Narada Muni has been instructing in this allegorical way. As I explained the other day, this instruction by allegory means that Narada Muni is taking some special effort to make the points very clear, very palatable to King Prachini Barisha, that he can see, I should not do this animal sacrifice. I should give up this whole endeavor to expand my sense gratification by Vedic rituals, and rather I should set my sights on becoming a pure devotee, a pure servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and finish up my business in this material world in this one lifetime. So that is, of course, a very heavy instruction for anyone to take. Narada Muni is guru. That's one of the meanings of guru. Guru means heavy. So guru has to give this heaviest of instructions, that give up sense gratification, become engaged only in Krishna's service. So some persons don't like to hear that, at least so directly. So Narada Muni is showing the king special favor, explaining this in an allegorical way. Then the next canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the fifth canto, deals with a subject matter which is called uti. Uti means impetus for activity. Now, just like a warning, impetus for activity, that's general, but specifically, for instance, a warning. If you warn someone that the house is burning, that's certainly an impetus for activity. Everyone runs out of the house, or someone calls the fire department, but certainly we won't remain just sitting and staring at the TV tube. Of course, actually, I read in some news report that actually did happen in one household. The house was burning, and someone came down, one of the sons or daughters, the rest of the family was sitting in front of the TV, and they were trying to get their attention. The house is burning. But everyone was saying, come on, don't make a disturbance. This is really good. So... But for persons who are not so severely brainwashed, a warning like that is an impetus for activity. So in the fifth canto, we find the description of the hellish planets. And actually, Narada Muni also here, in this fourth canto, is going to reveal to King Prachini Baryashat by a vision. He reveals what will happen to the king after he leaves his body. That these animals he has sacrificed will assume a form known as rurus. This means these animals take very ghastly, horrible forms. And they come just after the death of a person who has committed sinful acts. Such rurus attack him, attack his subtle body, and rip it to shreds. And he has to feel this pain. Of course, the nature of the subtle body is that it cannot die. It can be damaged in so many ways, but it cannot die. So the pain is just unending. So actually, Narada Muni shows that he does this favor for King Prachini Barishat also. And then the fifth canto, which is giving this uti, impetus for action, is graphically describing these 27 or 28, whatever they are, hells, various hells, which people have to enter for their sins. And they suffer terribly. So this is impetus for activity. For what kind of activity? For devotional activity. Giving up material activity and embracing spiritual activity, devotional activity. Bhakti Yoga. So Bhagavatam, such a wonderful literature, such a great literature, and as Srila Prabhupada says, Vaishnavas are compassion. So Bhagavatam And the Lord himself is the origin of all this karuna, compassion. Therefore, he has come as Lord Buddha. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is also an incarnation of Krishna. Literary incarnation of Krishna. So in these instructions by Narada Muni and in the warning given in the fifth canto, we can see clear manifestation of this jivadaya, this mercy upon the fallen souls. But unfortunately, for so many of these foolish living entities, as Srila Prabhupada writes here, consequently, no reason or philosophy appeals to them because they are stone-hearted. So even such clear instructions presented in such a nice allegorical way that captivates the mind, or if that's too soft, then you go to the next canto and you see these descriptions of how the Yamadutas are ripping out the intestines of the souls being punished and forcing them to eat their own flesh and so on and so forth. All these whipping them, beating them until they faint, until they scream, until they beg for death, but they cannot die. They're being ground up between big stones and thrown off of high mountains and all sorts of things. So that is also there, just to drive the point home. If you cannot take this very nice, palatable instruction, then at least take this warning. But stone-hearted persons, such instructions, either as nice, palatable, allegorical story, or as dire warning, it goes in one ear and out the other. Because there's nothing in between to stop the flow. You see? The head is already empty. So this is our, this is the situation, unfortunately, that we're faced with in this modern age. People have become slaughtered. The theme here is about slaughterhouse. So Srila Prabhupada also used to compare the modern educational institutions, the schools, he would compare them to slaughterhouse also. So the innocent children are going in a very young age, 5, 6 years old. And their intelligence is being systematically slaughtered by the demons. They're being taught that there is no, very systematically, very subtly also, that there is no existence beyond this body. The purpose of this body is sense gratification. We've all evolved from monkeys anyway. So we have that monkey nature in our chromosomes. So when you get these monkey urges, it's all right. If it feels good, do it. So all this is drilled into the heads, slaughtering the good human intelligence. Like Bhakti Bhai Bab Maharaj, he was telling me about his first years in school. He went to school in Hamburg soon after the end of the Second World War in Germany. And he can remember, things were not so nice in Germany then, because the war had ended and Germany had lost, so things were a bit primitive. So they had this very nasty food that the young kids, 5, 6 years old, just beginning school, they had to eat. It's sort of like, you know, intestines that are brought in from the slaughterhouse. These various really nasty parts of the animals. Because school lunches are notoriously cheap anyway. So in those days, cheap meant something really, really terrible. And so he remembers how the children, the young children who were just beginning school, they would, Hare Krishna, they would become revulsed by this. They would become disgusted, nauseated. This slop, this, you know, bloody, half-cooked meat, intestines, and so on, would be put in front of them. And there would be some big woman, the cafeteria matron, and she would order them, "Now eat." They wouldn't want to eat, and they would start to cry. And then she would take it and push it in their mouths. And then they would vomit, and then she would scoop up the vomit and push that in their mouths. So he can remember all this. So, actually, by nature, Prabhupada used to point this out, how sometimes devotees would tell Srila Prabhupada similar stories in the home when they were young. They were forced to eat meat and they didn't like it. When their mother first started to spoon the meat into their mouth, they would scream and cry and try not to take it. And Srila Prabhupada would say, "Just see, that is the nature. That is actually the human nature. Human nature, even in these Western countries, you see it more clearly in the younger children. They don't want to eat meat. And they are naturally compassionate also. Like Srila Prabhupada, in one lecture, he recollected how he once saw in India a Muslim father killing a chicken on the roadside. Actually, once when I was in Pakistan, I saw the same thing, how they do this. They just go out in front of the house. There's so many chickens running around. They just grab one and take out the knife and cut off the head. So Srila Prabhupada remembered how the father was, there was a father and a son, Muslims. And the son was just a little boy. So the father picked up such a chicken and cut its neck, and the chicken was running, you know how they do without a head, running and flapping. And the father was laughing to see the chicken in its death throes. But the child was crying. The child was very unhappy to see this. So Srila Prabhupada, actually, when Srila Prabhupada told this story, you could hear in his voice that he was still very moved by this, although he had seen this many years ago. So Srila Prabhupada's voice was also registering some emotion as he remembered this, how the young child was naturally abhorred, naturally horrified to see this. So that is the real human nature. But these innocent children are collected together and put on the bus, just like the animals are collected and put on those big trucks. They drive them to the slaughterhouse, or the Jews were put on the cattle cars of the trains and sent to Auschwitz. So the young children are put on the school bus and driven to the school. And they're good human nature, which is there, which is actually meant to be developed by proper education. It is systematically destroyed. Systematically destroyed. And thus, we have what we have now, walking the streets. So many, many people who are simply unable to take any good instruction. There's just nothing up there. Just goes in one ear and out the other. They're more or less already animals. So, but anyway, Bajare, Bajare, Aman, Mon, Atimandal, this Bengali saying says, in any case, just worship the Lord, just worship the Lord, because your mind is so rotten. Even you don't have a mind, or it's so rotten you can't understand anything. Still, the Vaishnavas are begging, please anyway, just worship the Lord, just worship the Lord. Because anyone can see that the life of a devotee, the way of life of the Vaishnavas, is so infinitely superior to this degraded, horrible, disgusting life of sense gratification, which is so fraught with these insidious dangers. See, a Vaishnava not only is the lifestyle so pure, Vaishnava refrains from all sinful activities. As Srila Prabhupada said, it's such a wonderful life, he said in a lecture in Hawaii, I believe. Or somewhere. Maybe it wasn't Hawaii, maybe it was Los Angeles. Anyway, it was a long time ago, this lecture. Srila Prabhupada was saying that who could not fail to be attracted to take up Krishna consciousness when they see in this movement that the devotees are living in the best homes, the best houses, in other words, the temple of the Lord. It's the best sort of place to live. And they're eating the best food. And they have the best company. I mean, I'm sure everybody here knows very well that they could never find such friends, such companionship in the material world as you find here in the temple or in the ISKCON movement. So many interesting and blissful devotees whose association just enlivens us. And out there, what do you see? Just gray faces. Misery. Or lust on the other side. It's either lust or depression. Either they're all fired up to go do something horrible, or or they're just totally depressed, laying in bed. Covers over the head. Don't bother me. This is the friends one gets in the material world. And the best recreation, Srila Prabhupada said, and we have the best, we have the most fun of anyone chanting Hare Krishna and doing so many other transcendental activities which are so blissful. So the lifestyle of a devotee is so easily superior to anything that's going on in the material world. But not only that, a devotee, by living this Krishna conscious lifestyle, he has no worries, he has no anxieties for anything, even for death. Because one who is 100% engaged in Krishna service 24 hours a day, if death comes to him, actually it means a door to even more blissful service has opened. That's all. Devotee doesn't lament. Whereas the life of the karmis is so nasty, so horrible. And not only that, they're plagued by that ever-present danger of death or old age or disease, which is all leading to death. Because they're so much attached to the body, so this natural deterioration and extinction of the body is so horrible for them. So painful. So this is the life of these unfortunate rascals. And Srila Prabhupada makes an interesting point here. Rascal swamis and yogis encourage foolish persons to go on eating flesh and killing animals and at the same time continue their so-called meditation and mystical practices. So I think I mentioned previously in a lecture here about how this different forms of tantra, this black so-called mysticism, which involves very nasty activities, which is being passed off as spiritual life. This is on the increase like anything. And now just recently, I discovered something new, a new aspect to this view of the world, is that this AIDS virus, which is spreading everywhere, and which nobody knows what to do about. The actual origin of this AIDS virus, as the scientists and they have declared, and everyone now accepts, the AIDS virus began in Central Africa and in Haiti. And from there it spread outward. Now, This is always considered a mystery. Actually, some African people, they objected to this, that, oh, this is some kind of ethnic, chauvinism. The white men are saying the black men are the cause of AIDS and so on and so forth. But, and everyone is sort of wondering, why did it start in Africa? Well, juju man, what's called a juju man, means an African witch doctor, who is a big authority in the field of black magic, which the Africans called juju, and which is known in Haiti as voodoo. So both in Africa and Haiti, they practice this, and in other places too. So a juju man, who has become a Christian, has written a book in which he really takes the cover off all this black ritual that's being done by these tribes in Central Africa. Things that involve cannibalism. And of course, it's a practically daily practice to cut off the head of some chicken or some other creature and drink its blood, some monkey. There's a lot of blood drinking. So he has said that everyone in Africa, in Central Africa, they know that this disease, which they call slim, the slim disease, because it makes you skinny, AIDS, they know that it has originated out of this juju, from so much blood drinking, eating of human flesh, and this sort of thing. Because this is how AIDS is transferred by, as they say, by the exchange of bodily fluids. So, in the West, it is exchanged by sex, and also to some extent in Africa. But actually, the real means how it is spreading in Africa, it's such an alarming rate, because it's really spreading like wildfire there and in Haiti, is by this black tantric rituals of drinking. They actually say that the AIDS originates, has come from the monkeys. The Western scientists have said this is where we first discovered the AIDS virus, among the monkeys. And then they say, how did it get to the human beings? I remember reading some article a few years ago where the scientists were, I think they were, maybe, they didn't want to say, but they were hinting that maybe these Africans are having sex with the monkeys or something. But no, what they're doing is that they ritualistically cut off the heads of the monkeys and drink the blood. This goes on in every African village. In this way, the monkey spirit enters them, and you know, so on and so forth. So now this juju religion, it is also spreading in the West, like anything. There is a form of it which is huge. It's called Santiera in South America, and also now it's come to North America, to the United States. It's really big. And, you know, it involves ritualistic animal slaughter, offerings to different ghosts, and of course they drink the blood. So this is becoming very, very widespread. And along with it, the AIDS reaction is also spreading. So it's very interesting how these things are happening. And as Prabhupada says, so-called or rascal swamis and yogis, we can include, because swami means master, so it doesn't have to just mean some Indian swami. It can mean some voodoo swami or some whatever, some sort of spiritual master. They encourage these demoniac activities, which are also killing the souls of the human beings, but also killing the bodies, because a sinful reaction is spreading in the form of AIDS. And when Srila Prabhupada was visiting with some devotees a place in Nellore, there was a rather wealthy family that said they wanted to donate some land for ISKCON. That's in Tamil Nadu. No, it's in Andhra Pradesh, just above the Tamil Nadu border. So, but it turned out that this family were all addicted to what Srila Prabhupada used to call the Murgi mission. There's a mission, the Ram Krishna mission, famous in India. So called, it's accepted as a spiritual group, you know, founded by a great saint, Paramahansa Sri Ramakrishna, whom Srila Prabhupada said dragged all of Bengal to hell. So he's supposed to be the reincarnation of Rama, Krishna, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he was a Shakta, a worshipper of goddess Kali. He was a tantric, actually. But in order to also cover the, you know, the Vaishnava doctrine too with his nonsense, he claimed also to be an avatar. So anyway, he started this mission, the Ramakrishna Mission, which is accepted all around India as a very important welfare organization. So, but Srila Prabhupada used to call it the Murgi Mission. Murgi means chicken. Chicken mission, because this is directly what Srila Prabhupada is referring to in this purport. Rascal swamis and yogis encourage foolish persons to go on eating flesh and killing animals. So this Murgi Mission, they say that there are so many hungry people and we have to feed them. So we'll feed them with whatever's available. And if chickens are available, we'll feed them with chickens. So they have their, you know, food for death program in which they distribute slaughtered chickens to the masses. So it turned out that Srila Prabhupada and these devotees he was with, actually Sri Vishnupad was there too, and Harisari Prabhu, and I think Harikesh Maharaj was there, and maybe Achyutananda Maharaj. Anyway, there was a few devotees. So they came, and they didn't take long to find out that these are Ramakrishna Murgi Mission people. And Harisari even discovered that in their garden they are having tulsi plant. Now you know there's two kinds of tulsi plant. One's called the Rama Tulsi and the other called the Krishna Tulsi. So they had arranged them that there would be Rama Tulsi, then Krishna Tulsi, Rama Tulsi, Krishna. So Ram, Krishna, Ram, Krishna, Ram, Krishna, all around the garden. But what was so outrageous about this was that the tulsis had been trimmed in the shape of chickens. So this, you know, this nonsense is going on. And when one morning, they stayed there a couple days, and then they realized that these persons were not at all serious about doing anything for ISKCON, so then Prabhupada left. But one morning, Prabhupada became disturbed that Srila Prabhupada got up early, of course, but nobody else got up early. So then he was chastising his disciples that we are here one day and you're already becoming influenced. So this is a point that just the influence is everywhere. Such demoniac influence, pseudo-spiritualism, animal slaughter, mind slaughter, perverted sexuality, all these things. The atmosphere is saturated with them. So Srila Prabhupada warned his disciples there, don't become influenced by that, because we have to preach. This is the compassion of a Vaishnava. He comes to preach. Even the Supreme Lord himself came to preach to hard-nosed atheists. They were so hard-hearted atheists that he himself, as Lord Buddha, had to preach atheism. He couldn't tell them about God. So he just cancelled that aspect of the philosophy. And just taught them about karma, reincarnation, and ahimsa, non-violence. That's the sum and substance of Buddhism. But this is the compassion of the Supreme Lord. That he comes among the atheists and he'll even speak that philosophy. And the great Vaishnavas also. Although they don't have to come, they come out of compassion. So, we are not great Vaishnavas, but we are servants of the Vaishnavas. Therefore, we must also follow in their footsteps and try to develop at least some compassion. Otherwise, if we don't have this, then here we are in this hellish atmosphere. If we don't have a purpose for us being here, and for our preaching, the purpose being this compassion, this sense of mission, then we will also be easily succumb to this nonsense. So a devotee who's inspired by the mission of Krishna consciousness, he's not dull, he's not lazy, sleepy, morose, but he's very enlivened, very bright-eyed, enthusiastic. His mind is always working with plans how to spread Krishna consciousness. This is his desire. So therefore he can be a successful preacher. Anyone who meets such a person, he's so different from everyone else that they immediately become attracted. As Srila Prabhupada used to mark that one Catholic priest somewhere in America was asking the devotees, when he saw the devotees on the street, where do you come from? What country do you come from? Because he couldn't believe that persons with such bright faces, so effulgent persons, could actually be from the United States. They had to come from some other place. Actually, Prabhupada said, the devotees come from Vaikuntha, come from the spiritual world. Or they look exactly when they're shaved-headed and wearing tilak and have neck beads japa beads in their hand and are wearing saffron cloth, then they look exactly as if they have descended from Vaikuntha. And this, everyone must take notice. It is wonderful. Yes, so this is a mission of mercy, ordained by Lord Chaitanya himself. Also, as mentioned here, about the young girls who are exploited as prostitutes. So that's another condemned aspect of our so-called civilized culture, that practically every young girl in this Western society, she is obliged when she reaches, say, age 14, 15, 16, she's obliged to spend a few years of her life as a prostitute. Although she may have no intention of this. But, because Prabhupada said, what did Prabhupada say? Prabhupada said, what you call in your country girlfriend, we call in our country prostitute. So in order to get a husband, you see, the girl just may have that standard natural desire that she wants to have a husband, she wants to have children and be a housewife. But in order to get that, which is just the natural life for a normal woman, she has to, when she reaches age 15, 16, she has to start putting on Hare Krishna. I know the girls in Germany, they call the Kriegsmalerei, means the war paint, the makeup, in order to attract them. And then they have to wear the sexy styles. They become prostitutes. They have to hang out in clubs and look as loose as possible, look available, so that boys will be interested in them. And of course, then they have to satisfy the senses of these boys in any way they want, convince them that they're really up to date in every way, and then maybe the boys will then become their regular customers. And maybe at the end they'll even get married, or at least have a sort of household life, maybe without marriage, but some children will come, and in that way the girl can realize her natural propensity as a female. So practically every young woman now, she has to, at least for some years in her life, become a prostitute. So it's not very remarkable that at least the more intelligent young ladies, they become horrified by this prospect when they reach that age. I remember when one bhaktin joined in Germany years ago, she was very young when she joined, and just out of the high school, and she had, so I think Sachinandan, that time Brahmachari, who used to deal with the bhaktis and bhaktins coming, he asked her, "Oh, you're coming so young, and You don't have any friends, you don't have any boyfriends or anything who will be disturbed. And her immediately reply, although this was like practically the first time she'd visited, or second time she'd visited the temple, then she announced her determination to become a devotee. She said, no, Krishna saved me from that. And she said that ever since I was old enough to think for myself, age 15, I was simply horrified by everything I saw going on around me. And somehow I was able to hang on for a couple more years until I could leave the school, leave my home, and now become a devotee. Krishna saved me from all that. So, you know, a girl with intelligence will immediately be horrified by this prospect. I have to become a prostitute. And then there's these again, so-called yogis and swamis, you know. A young lady may turn her attention to the spiritual path. She may think, yes, I don't want to be a material girl, as Madonna sings in her song. I want to be a spiritual girl. But then there's also so many these bogus yogis and swamis just waiting to have spiritual prostitute. It's like I heard when I was in Australia about a Mataji, because we don't have to go into detail, but there were some problems a few years back in ISKCON in Australia, because the guru there had difficulties. So some of those who had been initiated by that guru, they just became very doubtful, and they wanted some guidance from some advanced Vaishnava. So one Mataji, she went to Vrindavan. She was in distress. Where, you know, what is my situation? Where am I in Krishna consciousness? So she went to Vrindavan, and she thought she would just visit different ashrams and temples and see different sadhus, Vaishnava sadhus. So she went somewhere, and there was some sadhu who is so-called sadhu, so-called Vaishnava, who is supposed to be giving Krishna prema to his disciples and was welcoming very much Western disciples, especially young female Western disciples. So he was very happy to see a girl from ISKCON coming to him. But within something like the first 5 minutes of her interview, he asked her to come in to his private quarters. And then within the first 5 minutes of their talk, he made a sexual advance to her. And she went running out screaming all the way back to the Krishna Balaram temple. So this is the world is like this in the Kali Yuga. So demoniac. So we are so fortunate to have this Krishna consciousness movement. We must take shelter of this movement. We must simply completely forget any attraction to outside activities, because they're all in the mode of ignorance, very much influenced by the demoniac quality. And instead of that, engaging ourselves in demoniac activities, we must engage ourselves in the mission of this Krishna consciousness movement, a mission of saving the conditioned souls. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions?
So we should inspect all the inhabitants in Vrindavan, anyone see that they should, you know, how should we feel towards such a sadhu?
Well, he's asadhu. Well, one can be in the same three-dimensional locale as Vrindavan Dham, but yet not be in Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan is transcendental. There's actually no difference between Goloka and Gokula, or Bama Vrindavan. But how do you see the real Vrindavan that has been explained by Narottam Das Thakur? Vishyachadiya, you have to give up sense gratification. If one is still entangled in sensual affairs, then he cannot enter Vrindavan, even though he moves within the spatial area where Vrindavan is situated. Vrindavan is protected by Yoga Maya in the form of Purnamasi. So she is a protector. She does not allow any rascal entrance into the holy dham. So Srila Prabhupada once explained. Therefore, Vrindavan superficially, it sometimes looks to be a dirty place, pigs running through the streets, low-class people wandering around, and it's sometimes, you know, bad smells. Sometimes when you go through Vrindavan, you may get this impression. But that impression is part of this protective feature of Yoga Maya. It's there to repel those who are simply interested in sense gratification. They won't like this. So Srila Prabhupada said, actually he said, it's to keep these bogus Mayavadis away. So, but anyway, some of them are there. And of course, by even being in the proximity of Vrindavan, in the same spatial dimension, or I mean the spatial realm where Vrindavan is situated, although they're not actually in contact with Vrindavan, still they get great benefit. But we have to recognize them for what they are. Now, you follow Srila Prabhupada's example in dealing with them. There was one Baba, so-called Babaji, in Radhakund, who I remember him in the 1970s. You'd see him escorting some Matajis around on little pilgrimage tours of Vrindavan. Sometimes you'd see this. And then he would hint to them that there is more to Krishna consciousness than what Srila Prabhupada had taught. And then, of course, this got back to Srila Prabhupada, and then Srila Prabhupada said, I don't want anyone associating with this person. And so once this person came to the Krishna Balaram Mandir while Srila Prabhupada was sitting in the courtyard outside where that beautiful tamal tree is. So then, because this person, he was trying to attract ISKCON followers to himself, so he made a big show of offering obeisances to Srila Prabhupada and, you know, acting like a Vaishnava, you know, with folded hands. Prabhupada didn't even look at him. Prabhupada neither said anything to him or looked at him, just totally ignored him. So actually Prabhupada writes this in his books, that these persons who are posing as Vaishnavas, but who are actually simply gross sense gratifiers, they should be ignored. And this is the example Prabhupada showed. Just ignore them. You don't have to criticize them. Of course, if someone asks you, I was thinking of going seeing this nice Babaji in Radhakund, then you have to speak openly. But our policy with them in general is to just ignore them. They're not worthy of our attention in either way, positively or even negatively. Anything else?
Didn't the Prabhupada say that even the Muslims were chopping off the heads of goats and they even go back to Calcutta? He said that.
Well, those in human form are committing sinful activities. They don't immediately go back. They have to take form of some animal in Vrindavan and then. So that's considered shameful. Of course, anyone who lives in Vrindavan, he's somehow or other very much blessed by Krishna. But a sense gratifier, he cannot know what Vrindavan is. He cannot know the Vrindavan of the six Goswamis. Srila Prabhupada actually once said, therefore, when we speak of Rajavasis, residents of Vrindavan, we're talking of the six Goswamis. Because they know what is Vrindavan. Right? Everyone is special. Prabhupada said, even the pigs are special. They're not ordinary. But do the pigs know what is Vrindavan? Can you go on parikram with a pig and ask him, what is the significance of this holy place? And he'll give an answer. Obviously not. Anything else? Jai. Huh? No. You're full of questions today.
Well, I mean, this is not really a relevant question, but this is about AIDS. Cannot them spread by mosquito bites? That's a conscious question.
Well, perhaps it does also. I don't know.
The materialists say it can't.
Yeah, they say so many things, but a girl in America is dying because she went to a dentist who had AIDS. And he just put his hand in her mouth and she got AIDS from that. She testified at the U.S. Congress. And then, of course, the materialists, because they want to defend their sense gratification, they say, well, this is very unusual. This doesn't normally happen. But she and four other patients of this dentist came down with AIDS. He just put his hand in their mouth. I guess he even had gloves on, but somehow or other, they don't know how it happened. They got AIDS.
It's, you said bipolar fluid, so maybe, speeding and also...
Possibly. But they say normally it doesn't, they say it doesn't. Therefore, they promote this, what they call safer sex, or safe sex, or whatever it is. Anyway. Marx said religion is the opiate of the people, but I say sex is the opiate of the people. It's the thing that makes everyone think, oh, it's all right. Everything's all right. Even this AIDS disease is spreading. Well, anyway, it's all right. We'll just continue to have our sex. Somehow, it'll be all right. It's so much faith in sex life. Yes?
About the Kundal, if it is the same like it's in Vrindavan, because it's, I felt that it's difficult to attain the Kundal place, just like now. Is it the same with you?
Yes. Radha Kund is there in Vrindavan, so that you can develop love of Godhead just by bathing there. Rupa Goswami has recommended, has actually advised in his Nectar of Instruction, that that's the topmost attainment of spiritual life, simply to bathe in Radha Kunda. Now, why is it so difficult for great sages like Narada Muni even? Because Narada Muni is, for instance, he's more in Vaikuntha Bhava. His mood of devotion is the mood of awe and reverence. So because of being in that Vaikuntha mood, he does, to be able to bathe in Radha Kund and therefore change his mood to one of Krishna Prema, that is rarely attained by him. Although he's done it. But in general, his mood is a Vaikuntha mood. Just like also Lakshmiji. She wanted to enter the Ras Lila dance, but her mood as a devotee is one of reverential devotional service to Lord Vishnu. So she knows very well that Sri Krishna is the self-same Lord Vishnu. And she also knows that the Rasa Lila dance with the gopis is so wonderful, so nectarian. She wanted to experience that because she's thinking, I'm also the Lord's consort. But she could not. She could not enter the Rasa Lila dance, although she performed austerities for millions of years. The reason she could not enter is because of her mood. She has this mood of awe and reverence. She wants to serve the Lord with great respect. Whereas the gopis are very free in their dealings. They're treating Krishna as their lover. Krishna enjoys this. So it's a kind of conflict of moods. So Krishna doesn't allow Lakshmiji to attain his association in the Rasa Lila, because it would disturb everything too much. What would happen if Lakshmi herself suddenly entered the Rasa Lila? All the gopis would become, you know, shy. Oh, Goddess Lakshmi is here. They would all want to offer their obeisances. And then Krishna would also become shy because he'd be having his arms around different gopis. And there's Lakshmi with a lotus flower in her hand. She's a very majestic, opulent Vaikuntha lady. So it's just not the right mood. So Krishna, he just doesn't let this happen. But sometimes Narada gets the chance. Sometimes Lord Shiva gets the chance. They become gopis and can enter the Rasa Lila.
Lord Shiva's called Gopishvara.
Yeah, because he protects the Rasa Lila. He's in Vrindavan 5,000 years ago when Krishna had the Rasa Lila dance. He protected the dance, and also the gopis pray. They just like they prayed to Goddess Katyayani, they also pray. That's a common thing. Hindu girls pray to Lord Shiva for a good husband, so they also pray to Lord Shiva. They worship Lord Shiva to get Krishna as their husband. So in this way, he's the lord of the gopis. But he wanted to. He was his. You see, he had an interest in this too, that the gopis would worship him, because he wanted to get their blessing. So by their blessing, then he could also enter the Rasa Lila dance as a gopi. Well, he took the form of a gopi, but he still had a cobra around his neck, so you could see this one gopi was different.
Should you give meat to a dog?
Well, if you want the dog in your next life to give meat to you, he in a human form and you in a dog form, you can do that. Because that's a form of charity. Charity creates a karmic debt. Of course, this is charity really in the mode of ignorance, to give meat to a dog. But it creates a debt. So you're doing a good deed for this dog. So that means in the next life, or in some life in the future, then the position will be reversed. Then you become the dog, the hungry dog, and the dog will give you meat. So this doesn't sound like a very auspicious destination. Yes?
Why should we tell people that dogs and poor animals should give the dog nothing of interest in consciousness?
Well, if they have interest in Krishna consciousness, then they better lose interest in their dog. Huh? This is G-O-D consciousness, not D-O-G consciousness.
What should they do with a dog?
There's plenty of people who love dogs. They can give the dog to someone else. Once we had some, I remember we had some little kittens, it was Manidhar Prabhu in Germany, I remember. He was going door to door with paintings. And someone gave him two kittens, two little, real little, practically newborn kittens. And because he's compassionate or something, compassionate devotee, he accepted the kittens. And he brought them to the temple and just left them in the basement. So we had these little kittens for about a week or 2 weeks. Devotees were taking care of them. So they were feeding these kittens prasadam. But the problem is that due to the nature of cats and dogs, these sort of carnivorous animals, if at this infant age they eat, apparently it seems like this anyway, they eat only vegetarian type things, then the body doesn't get the right nutrients. So these little baby cats were starting to, you know, they're walking very unsteadily and starting to fall over and couldn't keep their balance because they weren't getting properly nourished. So then on one Sunday feast, after the lecture and the kirtan and everything, some devotee stood up and made an announcement. We have a couple kittens. Would anyone like to take them? And sure enough, there was a boy and girl who were visiting. And they took them. They were very happy to get some little cats. So there's always people who will take care of cats and dogs.
Actually, it is also possible for a dog to be vegetarian. I suppose one friend coming to Montreal, his dog had been vegetarian for 2 years. Should just give him a lot of meat and all this animal kind of.
Yeah, that's all right, but dogs are dirty. Dogs are inauspicious in every way. So if you still keep... Of course, if one is someone like Shivananda Sen, then you can liberate the dog. But at the neophyte stage, if we keep friendship with dog, then, you know, it does something. Mm-hmm. Upstairs. And I think that that's merciful.
Yeah, because the dog is suffering, and so he wants to get rid of this.
Anyway, you know, the thing is that this is all their misfortune. They're just very unfortunate people. They're not living according to human standard. Therefore, they're keeping cat and dog with them in their home and making them their best friend. So this is hunter civilization. This is hunter consciousness. You know, the hunters, the primitive hunters, they're the ones who keep dogs. Forest people, they keep dogs because dogs are good when you have to hunt. So that's also our European culture comes from this background. Forest hunters. Of course, originally, as I said, they were Kshatriyas from India, but they came and they lost their Kshatriya culture and interbred with local savages. So anyway, this hunter culture is very prominent. But this is not human culture. So the main thing is if they really want to come to the human standard of life, then they have to just get out of this whole bondage to their four-legged friends. So, you know, the fact that they're worried over some dog, some flea-bitten animal that has a hurt paw or something and can't walk properly or whatever, you know, this is just their misfortune. What can we say? You know, this is just not the human level. This Krishna consciousness movement is actually meant for human beings. So we give the Hare Krishna mantra, we give the prasadam to bring people up to the human standard. The human standard means then they give all this up. But it's not... You see, philosophically speaking, to kill an injured animal is wrong. Because the injury is there by karma. It's the animal's karma. The karma is due to suffer this. So... Of course, we don't take care of dogs, but we do take care of cows. And so, and this question it came up to Srila Prabhupada, that when a cow is, or a calf, gets some disease or is in some way incapacitated, Srila Prabhupada was asked, especially because then you have these demoniac laws, you know, agricultural laws, which even say, you know, this such animal has to be killed. They even say this. So the devotees, not because the devotees were interested in killing the cow, but they were wondering that, you know, if we have this sick, crippled cow, and the authorities, because they always have these farm commissions that see how what everyone's doing on the farm. So if the authorities find out about that we're keeping this cow, they'll say, you know, the cow should be killed. And so Srila Prabhupada said, no, you should take care of the cow, make it as comfortable as possible. It's going to leave its body, but you should make its last days as comfortable as possible, because that suffering is due this animal. And if the animal suffers, then it will be relieved from that karmic debt, that sinful reaction. So actually, that's the same, you know, the same nonsense liberal mentality says we shouldn't have capital punishment. So some maniac goes out and hacks up a few families with an axe, and then they put him in jail for 10 years, you know. And say, well, we can't, you know, we can't take his life. That would be inhumane. Just put him in jail for 10 years and let him go. And then, you know, he comes in the next day after having butchered some old lady. All right, put him away for another 10 years. But actually, it is proper to execute him, because that relieves him of the sin, that awful sin of murder. He becomes relieved. But if you just keep him in jail for 10 years, and then he dies a natural death, then he has to suffer so much in hell. So it's actually mercy. But people, as I say, in one ear, out the other, because there's nothing to stop the traffic in between, no brain. They're just like beasts. They have this very primitive and sensual concept. Just like, you know, like an animal. Like cows, for instance. As much food as you put before them, they will eat. And they'll think you're being really kind to them. Oh boy, today it's just bucket after bucket of oats. Let me eat. Chomp, chomp, chomp. They'll eat themselves to death. They'll eat themselves till their stomach bursts, because they have no brain. But if you know, more food you put in front of them, the more they'll eat, the more they'll think, oh, this is my friend. Wow, this is really nice. Well, I've never eaten so much. This is great. And then they die. And people have become like that now. You know, they have such conception of what is nice, what is proper, what is compassionate. Yeah? Just like a dumb animal. Eat till your stomach bursts. This is welfare work, you know. This is very nice. Now, this is foolishness. Therefore, one who knows about animals, he doesn't let the animals just eat unlimitedly. They eat a certain amount, and of course they're still hungry. They're always hungry, because they're not in control of their senses. You know, so they all continue to go, you know, calling for more food, but you benefit them by not feeding them. And similarly, by imposing Vedic rules and regulations on human society, reintroducing capital punishment, closing all the porno shops, saving all the young girls from prostitution, and all these sorts of things. You know, there would immediately be a big outrage, especially in Denmark. They'd be out on the streets demonstrating. Sex, we want our drugs, we want our aquavit. That would be a big protest, but actually this would be good for them. This would benefit them. But animals can never understand this. Animals never understand this. What can you do? Anyway, we go on preaching. Prabhupada once said, he said, in this material world, everyone is foolish. You see? Everyone is fool in the material world. And even us devotees. This is our foolishness, that we preach to fools. So it's like this. If you're in the material world, you have to be a fool somehow. So be a fool in this way. We go out and we preach to fools. By this foolishness, we please Lord Chaitanya and the Guru Parampara. Yes?
So I recall also the conversation with Srila Prabhupada, where he's asked the point about mercy killing in hospitals. So someone is just lying in the respirator for a month in coma, and not actually living on the human platform, like a vegetable or something. But keeping alive in the human form.
Mm-hmm.
So he was asked if it is proper to kill such a person, or should they let them live? And I recall the Prabhupada says, let them live, but there is always a possibility for the conflict.
Yeah. Of course, that is very artificial, these life support systems. By the man's karma, it's Because he's lying there in coma means he should be dead. But by some artificial arrangement, his life has been prolonged in that body in a very ignorant and inauspicious way. This comatose situation, this state of consciousness, is very inauspicious. If you leave your body in that sort of state, where do you go? Whew, you know, like a blanked out consciousness, you know. So, by natural arrangement of things, the person would have died already a long time ago. So, but anyway, once he's under, you see, that's the thing. Once he's under, once they've gone that far in keeping him alive, if they do pull the plug, that's murder. So therefore, it's better for them not to. Yeah?
Yeah, I was wondering, the Brahma Samhita, is this scripture mentioned in some Puranas, all the Vedic scriptures?
Is the Brahma Samhita mentioned in other Puranas? Well, it's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. About Puranic literature, I don't know for sure. I couldn't answer that question, affirmative or negative. Brahma Samhita is considered Shruti. It's considered Vedic. It's not Puranic. It's Veda, because it's spoken by Brahma directly. So it's very, very ancient, and it has been kept since time immemorial in the Adi Keshav temple in South India. They still have the original copy, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw 500 years ago, and the Brahmins made a copy of it and gave him the copy. And that's how it's entered the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. But the original manuscript is still there. And if you go there, if you go... not easy to get to the Adi Keshava temple, and you've got to get there at the time when the deities are not closed. But if you get there at the right time and you pay a little donation, the priest will show you that Brahma Samhita.
What's for the case in America of one girl in the comatose and she woke up in the news?
Yeah, okay. Good. Good for her. Any other such reports? As long as we're on that subject. How's your grandmother doing? Medical facts. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.